The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Welcome back to the programme this Thursday morning. It's 9 minutes past 10. I hope you're feeling good today. Thank you so much for all of you texting in. I'm going to get to those, of course, right now. I read a while ago that the biggest children's hospital in the world in Texas stopped providing puberty blockers. It shouldn't be left up to the doctors in Ireland to decide if puberty blockers can be used in children. Pharmaceutical companies make millions on these drugs. It is a very small amount of children in this country. I had the figure, it's single digits that have been given these for because they're trans, but I don't have that figure exactly in my head, but it's small. I'm not defending it in any way, shape or form. I'm just saying I put a smart meter in and my bill's now €20 extra a month. Yeah, but like, is that over the year? And I really don't want to sound like I'm defending smart meters. I'm not, but I just want to make sure that we have the right info. So what would have happened with me in the past, and I still think there's a bit of ambiguity about the bills, but it would have been like 100, not really these figures, right? But 100, 100, 100, 250. So the sort of guesstimated bills would eventually end up, I'd end up paying a big bill then on the fourth bill, say, for an example. So is your bill consistently 20 a month extra, less a catch-up bill, if that makes sense, or is it just €20 extra? Of course, electricity prices and other things have gone up, so it's hard to... I find the whole billing system really quite complicated because they're going to go up again now very shortly, and it's got nothing to do with the cost of energy. It's to do with rolling out upgrades to the network. I have a second property, says this listener, and they installed a smart meter without my consent. When I went to the property, there was a letter in my letterbox to say that it was installed. Another, my mother-in-law is on an oxygen machine 24 hours a day. She was told to let the electricity company know. Is there an allowance for electricity for oxygen machines? I'm not sure about that. I think one of the reasons you have to let them know is in terms of outages and what have you, because you're seen as a vulnerable customer. So I wonder, is it for that reason rather than there being an allowance for the use of an oxygen machine, which is on 24 hours a day? Someone out there will let me know. Morning, Greg. I've heard people on your show saying how high their bill is since they got a smart meter. Thank you. Of course, yes, indeed they have. And, you know, we've had a number of texts on that, but 75% of people now have smart meters. So you would really hope, if it was a major problem, I'd expect to see an absolute flood of people complaining about bills, if that makes sense, rather than a couple. And that's not in any way to water down their experience, but 75% of people have smart meters now. So if there was an increase in prices that could be attributed to that, I'd expect to be flooded with calls. Is the smart meter another way of keeping us under surveillance? Can they tell every time we check them? I presume if you access data, that is going to be counted. There's no doubt about that. If that's what you mean, if you, in terms of opening the door and having a look at it, I don't think so, unless you push buttons. A caller says, I'm not changing my meter until my defective concrete block house is fixed. Yeah, I know. And if you're in one of these houses, this conversation's going to seem really unimportant. I accept that. Hi, Greg. I have a smart meter since day one, but have signed up to nothing. Am I at a disadvantage, or is it just that I can't see where I'm using electricity? Well, say you have a smart car you charge at home. I mean, there probably is a logic to having a day-night whereby it's cheaper to charge your car at night. But generally, when I've seen that, the day unit goes up. So you have to see, you know, if that's an advantage to you. But according to our guest, you have the data now to be able to see that. But it sounds like a lot of hard work, but maybe I'm lazy. Morning, can you ask that lady what's wrong with the meters we have in? And a friend of mine has his 3-meter. He has his 3-meter in because all the two went on fire. It's his 3rd meter in. I'm just asking a friend that has a smart meter. She said she does not see any difference. So why waste money taking out what we have? And I talked to a man that was putting in a smart meter in a house over the road. The family's in England. And he said he was told to put it in even if they had no contact. The family said, so I said no. So if you don't actually object, they can put them in. That's the bottom line. In relation to a lady has seen no difference in them, maybe that's because she hasn't gone into a particular tariff or not. I'm not sure. Smart meters changes would not be made if there's no financial gain by the provider. As with everything else, it's all about money. She's using scare tactics now. I've never heard of the standard meter breaking down. The point is, and I certainly would not be involved in scare tactics. The reality is if your standard meter breaks down, they will tell you, well, we can't fix that. So it might not break down. ever. Might outlive all of us. Of course, like, we're always a product. We're always a commodity. What any organization is going to try and, you know, target products at us. So, you know, they've got more information to do so. They'll certainly do so. So we have Micah. What's the point in changing the meter when the house has to be tumbled? None, really, in that situation, of course. Hi, Greg. I was told by Prepay Power that my smart meter is being read via 4G, not 5G, so the bills aren't accurate. Is this true? Well, it's 2G and 4G. 5G, I don't really see any benefit to 5G at all. Do you remember when 5G was, I'm going to start waffling here, so apologies, but do you remember when 5G was being rolled out and the adverts were all like, you could do this and you could do that and you could land planes and you could be effectively at a football match in a headset and all this nonsense? I've got 5G phones now for 18 months and I see zero difference in them and 4G other than 5G's on the screen. Right, so, I mean, if you're... if your cabinet is able to communicate with the ESB networks, you should expect accurate bills, is what I'm saying, regardless of what G it's on. Why has my bill gone up since I got a smart meter installed? I haven't been using any more units than previously. Well, I would take the old bill out, look at your unit usage, you know, the red unit usage, and compare it to what your most recent bill is, and just maybe you've already done that and just absolutely confirm that that's the case. I totally agree, Greg. This is in relation to Michael O'Leary wanting two pints or two drinks, a two drink maximum in airport bars. I totally agree, Greg. Two drinks is enough. Remember a trip to Turkey where we were sitting beside six ladies that were drinking their duty free. So noisy, everyone was giving out. I thought your drink you buy in duty free, your bag is sealed. We couldn't wait to get landed. It's a relatively long flight to Turkey too, I believe, is it? Michael O'Leary's just trying to get the Ryanair brand out there in media discussions. He knows that this proposed limits on pre-flight drinks is a non-runner. He knows that it would be easy to get another person who doesn't need a drink to purchase a whiskey or two. This stunt is similar to the time he suggested removing toilets so that he could get a few more seats in the aircraft. Drink will always be available to purchase on his planes. This practice should be stopped in the event of an emergency. Everyone needs to be fully sober. You don't want a drunk person making... exacerbating the situation. Exactly. You know, I mean, if he had said two drinks maximum, plus we're not going to allow you to drink duty free or serve drink on the plane, then I might have gone, right, they might be serious about this. Elon Musk's son has puberty blockers. That's why Elon is so anti-woke. His life has been ruined by these puberty blockers. I'm not sure actually the his son now purports to be his daughter. And that is part of the reason why he is anti them. But lots of people are on Twitter. The tiny amount of people in Ireland are on Twitter and probably won't even get that reference. Charlie on Facebook says, what about banning phones in restaurants? Would a night out with your loved one be more interesting, or would it help make the food feel better? I don't know. Well, I suppose two people, if they want a night out, two loved ones, Charlie, they can maybe... themselves say, right, we're not going to have our phones out. I don't know. We were talking to about Angel Delight, which is yuck, but apparently it was the food as adults that reminds you most of your childhood. Mine was dumplings, and so some other people have been texting in theirs. Morning, Greg. Childhood food memories: chocolate sponge cake and pink custard. School dinners there. Bread, butter and sugar. Bread, butter and jam. Jam sandwiches, that's another one, actually. Jam sandwiches reminds me of my youth. I don't know if I've had a jam sandwich as an adult, but I know I had jam sandwiches very regularly as a child. Something that reminds me of my youth, Wibbly Wobbly Wonder. That comes in from Mary. I remember them too, Wibbly Wobbly Wonders. So we're also asking, as well as everything else, what food reminds you of your childhood? If I were to present you with one thing now, or sorry, if you were to name one food item that reminds you of your childhood, what would it be? 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and texts to that number. A caller says, Greg, pedestrian crossings at the school in Stranall are changing to red. No one near them. The traffic's bad enough, says the listener. I think sometimes maybe if I have the right set of traffic lights, I think sometimes people can give the button a wee jab on the way past. And I have seen that. And that is going to activate the lights. They're not going to know if someone's there or not. Right, okay. So... On Sunday the 8th of September, I want to remind you that the 9 till noon show will broadcast live from the London Irish Charity Vintage Club in Greenford in London from 12 noon to 2 p.m. So we're going to be live on site there. If you're over there, come over, say hello. If you're not going over, why not see if there's any good flights there, because it's a great day out. And other than all of that, you can listen and watch the show here on Highland Radio. That is a special show between 12 and 2, live from the London Irish Charity Vintage Club on Sunday the 8th of September. Right, now, as Psoriasis Awareness Month draws to a close, we decided to invite Professor Oliver Fitzgerald, a consultant rheumatologist and a study lead. These are initial findings from a study of Irish psoriasis patients by a team of researchers at University College Dublin, set up to detect early signs of psoriatic arthritis or arthritis related to having psoriasis. It's shown that of the approximately 1,500 participants with psoriasis who've so far registered for the study and completed a screening tool, one in four showed evidence of possible arthritis. Professor, thank you for your time this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your show.
No, it's good to have you on the show. Right, so it's best to go. Well, I'll tell you that I wouldn't mind actually just to recap, because often I presume everyone knows exactly what we're talking about, but we have new listeners all the time and people looking for new information. So what is psoriasis?
Psoriasis is a skin rash. It's a scaly, itchy rash commonly found on areas like the backs of the elbows and the scalp, the fronts of the knees. It can affect the whole skin surface and can also affect the nails. Quite common, affecting up to 2-3% of the population, so up to 70,000 people in Ireland are affected by psoriasis. It can be quite unsightly and distressing for the patient, obviously, as a result.
Does it come and go?
Yes, it does, but more commonly, it's a chronic condition. It tends to just linger be there pretty well all the time. So it gets better perhaps sometimes. Some people, it gets better in the summer. Sunlight may help it, but no, it's a chronic disease.
And what are our treatment options at this time?
Well, the good news is that, for many years, psoriasis was treated with topical creams and UV light as a way of trying to control the psoriasis. Helpful, but not particularly effective. But there have been substantial improvements in the past 10 to 15 years with improvements with treatments now that certainly can result in substantial improvement and sometimes clearance of the psoriasis in patients who are badly affected. So, certainly has improved.
So, this is not the first interview I've done talking about a link between psoriasis and arthritis. So, what is the relationship there, and what do we know, and what are we learning?
Well, we know that a proportion of patients with psoriasis may develop a specific form of arthritis that causes pain and swelling in the joints. It can be just a few joints or it can be all of the joints. It can also cause swelling and inflammation of digits. So the toes, for example, can look like little sausages. Mm. It can cause inflammation at the site of attachment of ligament to bone. A typical place would be, say, around the heel, where your Achilles tendon is attached to the back of your heel. That area can become inflamed. And it can also cause inflammation in the spine, so people can complain of pain and stiffness in their lower back or elsewhere in the spine related to the psoriasis. So it's quite a diverse, if you like, form of arthritis. It can be quite debilitating. It can cause joint damage, joint deformity, and it needs to be detected early and needs to be treated early mm-hmm. in order to prevent that from happening.
So we already know then that psoriatic arthritis can be found
psoriatic.
Thank you. Psoriatic. I'll get it wrong again before the end of the interview. Psoriatic arthritis can be part of someone's psoriasis experience, but. Where is the information gaps that this study helps fill, yeah. Professor?
Okay, so we know that it affects a proportion of people with psoriasis, so some people get it and some people don't. But we don't know why some people get it and why some people don't. If we could identify the risk factors that predict which patients are going to get psoriatic arthritis and which patients are not going to get it, we could potentially prevent it from happening. And that's what this study is about, this study called HPOS, H-P-O-S. Mm. It was launched in Ireland last September. It's a study that's running across Europe. We're aiming to recruit 25,000 people across Europe with psoriasis to the study. And the response in Ireland has been tremendous. We've had now up to 1,800 people registered to the study. And this these results that you referred to earlier on are the first cut of the first 1,500 people that were recruited to this study.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the early data, the baseline data in these individuals with psoriasis.
So presumably we have to find what the 25% have in common, or what differentiates the 25% from the 75%? Anything, any early indications?
So far, we have not looked at that.
Okay.
We do know from the literature that the arthritis occurs more commonly in people who have, say, nail disease. Mm. It occurs more commonly in people who are overweight. May be triggered by things like infections or trauma. So there are some features that, you know, may be helpful in predicting. But so far, where efforts have been made to predict which patients are going to do it, they haven't been specific or sensitive enough to be successful. So we need a large study in order to do that.
I'm not a doctor, obviously, or anything close to it.
That's
but
all right.
Say, for instance, with the likes of gout, which I understand to be a part of arthritis, you can do a blood test where it will indicate there are higher levels of it's an acid or whatever it might be. If you do blood tests on people with this type of arthritis, are there markers that indicate that also?
And that's where the problem is. We do not at this point have good markers. We do not have any diagnostic tests for psoriatic arthritis. So the diagnosis of the arthritis is based on the clinical assessment by the doctor who's examining the patient. And as a result of that, the diagnosis is often delayed and people often are diagnosed at a point when damage has already occurred. So it would be very valuable to have a way of picking up or detecting the arthritis at an earlier stage. So that's what this study, HPOS, is all about.
Right.
The study is still recruiting. We're looking for more people in Ireland to register to the study. They have to have psoriasis. They shouldn't have arthritis at the time of enrollment. They should be over the age of 18. And all they need to do is to go online to www.hpos.study, and they'll find all the information there about the study. So it's quite a simple thing. It's done from the comfort of their own home.
Yeah, we'll pass that information on as well. A quick question for you before you let you go, Professor. Can you get psoriasis if you have eczema, or is there a relationship between those two conditions?
No, they're quite different.
Yeah. But obviously, when you started talking about scratching and what have you, I suppose that's what triggered that call. Okay, Professor, thank you very much for that. We've already had a big uptake in Ireland, and the more people that participate, the more thorough, obviously, the study is. So it would be good if people could. Professor Oliver Fitzgerald, thank you very much indeed. He's a consultant rheumatologist and study co-lead there, 086 60 25,000. Very excited that a little later on we're going to be announcing our four finalists for Irish Music Month. Just to let you know what's happening, is that we invited bands, musicians, rappers, individuals, folk singers, whatever it might be, to send in demos for consideration in this Irish Music Month, which is promoting Irish artists from every genre and from every county in Ireland. They submitted their applications. Our panel of judges have gone through them. We are down to four. We're going to hear live performances from all four tomorrow week, which is very exciting. We're going to be doing that in on Green on Theatre. All the information I was looking for is still not in this, in terms of prizes and what have you, but sure, look at it, it's grand. But anyway, they've already received, they will already receive a prize for being a finalist, and then for winning, and then on they go to the national competition where something will happen, where they'll be... I'll go through that again in a moment, but I'll do it later on. It's okay. Right, okay. Now, disturbing news overnight that fire damage has been caused to a number of church buildings, religious buildings. Fire damage in St. Johnston, damage to the Catholic Church, the Orange Hall, the Masonic Hall. I understand the Gardaí may have made arrest in relation to this incident. Sam Waterworth is Chair and Secretary of the Masonic Hall in St. Johnston. Right, currently at the hall, Sam, thank you very much for joining us, by the way. Horrible to hear this happening and to see the damage that has been caused. It's more significant in some of these premises than others, but still, there's something particularly uneasy about, I think, anyway, religious buildings being targeted in any way like this.
Oh, it is definitely. We have been in this present hall itself for a large number of years, and we're well within the community. We have community functions. We have a great carol service. We've been going now for the past nearly 10 years. The community is involved, of all the churches in the area, but we've just finished doing a bit of work to the hall, and all the work we do to the hall is voluntary.
Yeah.
And we just finished putting an outside shelter up, and that's... They came in last night and broke two windows. Now, we haven't got into the hall yet. The guards are still investigating, so we're waiting on the scenes of crime coming. So we don't know actually what damage itself has done to the hall, but from the outside, it looks terrible, you know. At least we're, a lot of us are standing here. We're just completely and utterly gutted at it, you know.
Yeah.
The work has been put into it, you know. Yeah.
So what damage, as far as we know at this time, what damage has been done? Can you describe what you're seeing?
What we see now is the bottom of two windows have been broken. They lifted climbed onto a chair and broke two windows in the main hall. Now, we don't know how they got in that way, but we don't know how the fire started, whether they started it with petrol or not. We don't know that as yet.
Yeah.
Until we get inside to see it. But the damage is, from looking from the outside, it is pretty bad. I'll put it this way, it's fixable. We'll come back again, but... The work we put into this hall over the last number of years is unbelievable. And it's all voluntary work, you know.
Yeah.
And using local tradesmen for together. Well, I need the tradesmen, you know. But as I say, there's a few of us standing here, and we just got it this morning.
Yeah.
There's a boy coming from Ireland to finish concreting for us on the outside. But we'll put that off. We'll get it fixed.
But still, listen, from what we understand, a person has been arrested in connection with these instances. So in fairness to the Gardaí, they're quick on the mark there. But it's still... I'm looking at the two windows that have been smashed here at the back, and an accelerant was put in through those windows. Is that what we understand, Sam?
I can't say that at this stage. We don't know. We don't know until the guards tell us that. We don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know.
But still sickening nonetheless. But as you said, we shouldn't have to do this. It will be fixed because the community got together to do the renovations in the first instance. Yeah.
Yes, we have. We're community based, and we're in the community a long time. We use the community to help with us. Anything we've done, our painting the building, for instance, our local painter painted for us. Majority of our members are from the area here.
Yeah. Of course. All right. It's sickening. All right, then. Listen, thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much under different circumstances.
Thanks. That's Sam Waterworth, who's the Chair and Secretary of the Masonic Hall, St. Johnston. And we're just looking at the different buildings here. For those of you who are watching, you'll see the images in this one instance. And I'm not quite sure which building is which, to be honest with you, because I'm not from the local area. But we're looking at the front gable of one of the properties. There are two windows, one either side of the door. The door to the right, the window to the right certainly has been targeted. You can see that quite clearly. And quite a bit of external damage has been caused. The window is gone. It's a goner, so that's going to be after replaced. And there's smoke damage as well. But the person, whomever is responsible, had the intention, it seems, of burning it down. The second, I'm satisfied, this is the Masonic Hall in St. Johnston. To the rear of that building, it is gated. So to the rear of that building, there are two windows smashed there. It's still not clear, as there's an ongoing investigation, it's still not clear the extent of internal damage, but no doubt two windows were smashed. A lot of effort went into that. And also too, in the third building, this perhaps I would imagine is the Catholic Church. You can see that efforts have been made to smash a window there, and also to, it appears, set it on fire. So that's just some breaking emerging news for you there. It's quite annoying, quite frustrating, of course, for all involved. Right, it is the 9 till noon show. Our next guest joining us in studio after a quick break. Okay, we're joined on the programme now by John Joe McGowan, who is Chief Ambulance Officer with the National Ambulance Service West. Good morning to you, John Joe. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Bill.
Now, there's something that happens when you and your colleagues are out at the scene of a road traffic collision, or it seems literally anything that happens now, even a medical emergency or whatever it might be. Everyone has a mobile phone in their pocket or in their hand, and it seems for many the instinct is to take it out and film what's going on. And it depends on the incident. Firstly, we've seen crashes where crashes have happened, and also, too, maybe someone was the victim of an assault. And then that being spread around the place actually even compounds their trauma, and it's very hard for them to move on and sort of heal from that emotionally. But I suppose maybe you're going to focus on you more as it relates to, you know, the scenes of road traffic collisions, medical emergencies and what have you. So what do we see?
Yeah, so Greg, this was brought about, or the interview was brought about from a post on our Facebook page, just asking people to be conscious when they're encountering the scene of a road traffic accident or medical emergency in relation to the film, and then the publishing of that video on Facebook or other sharing it on other social media sites. So it is a worrying trend we're seeing, and I suppose we're coming at it from two aspects. The first aspect being one, the privacy of the patient and the people involved. And the second aspect then is the dangers that are associated with it. We've noticed, and we're getting feedbacks from crews on the ground, the worrying trend of when you see this, you see the videos up online, a lot of it is seen or filmed from a moving vehicle.
Which is obvious. It's obvious sometimes that it's actually from the driver's seat.
Exactly, yeah. And that's not always the case. Now, that's not always the case.
But that does happen.
Yeah. So I suppose what we're asking is to be conscious on them two aspects when you come across a medical emergency or at the scene of an accident. One, for the privacy of the patients and indeed our staff too. What we would ask you to do there is just think before you do it and publish it, is if it was your mum, your dad, your brother, your sister, or even indeed yourself, how would you like for that to be filmed and put up online and available not just today, but in 20 years' time or 30 years' time? It's there forever. So we're just asking people to be conscious of that when they go to do it. Look, we understand that everybody, when they're passing or come across an accident, are looking to see what's going on. That's
rubbernecking, it used to be called, isn't it?
Yeah. The old saying was rubbernecking, but that's just part and parcel with normal life. But what the new phenomenon or trend is that it's now recorded and put up online. We have started now, you'll often see at the scene of a road traffic accident, we have started to completely close down the road in relation to a road traffic accident when it happens. So that means that we'll put vehicles, or the fire service in conjunction with the Gardaí will put vehicles at each side of the accident to fend off. And it basically allows us to shut down that section of the road in order to extract the patients or deal with the incident and then move on. Because it was just becoming such an issue that we've seen secondary accidents caused by accidents.
So are you saying the policy was being changed because of... distracted drivers?
No, no. The policy sort of grew with time and over safety. Yeah, the roads are busier. The last couple of weeks ago there, I mean, myself was out at an accident on the main Sligo to Bundoran Road. And there was three or four children that seen people were given out to us for closing the road. But we had to, we have to close that road because there's children walking around the scene, there's debris, there's oil spilled, and it, we're just asking people to concentrate on getting through the accident, past the accident, and not video and record what's going on.
People giving out because you were closing the road.
It's a main thoroughfare, yeah.
Well, okay, but there's injured parties potentially.
Exactly, yeah.
That's remarkable. Right, you see, I think some of this is, and I think this might be generational as well, John Joe, and this is why I think this is important conversation. I think there's a lot of people that might do it and don't see the harm in it.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not actively doing it. You know, there's this trend where now you say where the guards are or you do what, whether people like that or not, right? That happens and this get that information as quick as possible. I don't think there's any malicious intent in it.
No.
So that's why I think it's really important to sort of say, by the way, there is consequences here. Have you thought about?
Yeah. Have you thought about the person that's involved in the accident and what they're going through?
Or
at
have
the time?
You thought about that their loved ones are on your Snapchat or your whatever yeah. feed it might be, and they learn for the first time
yeah.
that a loved one may, and even it might be a similar car or it might be their car. Have you considered that that's how someone might find information and the consequences of that as well?
Exactly. That's a real good point, Greg, because we've seen ourselves at accidents and even by the time that we return to base that it's up, and, or even by the time we get to the hospital, we're seeing stuff on social media and that in relation to the accident, pictures of it. And as you say, the families may not know at that stage. They may identify the car from that picture. They may not then be able to get in contact with the people involved, and it creates a whole trend of worry in relation to that.
I mean, there was like, and I know for a fact, and it seems, and maybe it's because it had such an impact on our lives, but often, John Joe, when me and you speak, it goes back to the Creases tragedy. and I know for a fact there was people that learned that people were involved in that before they knew.
Exactly, yeah.
Because people were taking pictures, and we've never used the picture, pictures of that familiar picture of the front, and cars were visible. Now, not everyone in those cars were injured, but people around that community were finding out that loved ones were at the scene of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone wants to be complicit in that.
No.
So it's just about thinking.
Definitely not. And as you say earlier, there's no malice in what's been done here, but people see it, they share it, and they pass it on. That's the other thing too, we would like to ask Greg, that if you do get it, not to share it or pass it on. It's
stop
so easy.
Break the chain.
Yeah, it's so easy to pass it forward on just a forward a WhatsApp message. But we'd like to ask that when you go to do that, just think that there is somebody behind that message, or there is somebody behind that picture, and there is loved ones involved.
Yeah, I wonder, I hope it wouldn't, but I wonder if it falls on deaf ears. I mean, I've stopped using the likes of X now because, you know, the videos in the For You that feed you, like there's people getting torn in two with machetes and having their heads stamped on them.
Yeah.
You know, motorcyclists going straight into back of cars, like, and you can't filter that stuff out.
No.
So if you're constantly exposed to that, do you become, if you're a younger person, desensitized to it? So you don't value life or these difficult situations in the way. I just think, I know we're talking about something specific here, John Joe, and I don't want to go off topic, but it just seems that anything goes now. You can post anything online.
It nearly becomes a normality at that stage. Like,
you become desensitized.
Yeah, exactly. But it is a growing trend, Greg. And really the ask today is just that you stop and think when you go to do it. And when you're passing, don't forget there's people working on them scenes. There's, like, if you're passing a road traffic accident, there's so many complexities involved. Debris on the road, people walking about, oil spills. And your concentration at that stage should be on the driving of the vehicle and the maneuver
with least impact on the scene, because someone is going through it at incredibly difficult
exactly
time, and there's people working under incredibly difficult circumstances. And I'm not asking you to comment on this, John Joe. I'm saying this myself. It's often mainstream media versus social media. I wish papers and other platforms would stop publishing pictures of smashed cars that young people or whoever their age might have been were involved in. I mean, maybe some might say, well, there's an education element to that, not within an hour or two of it actually happening. So if we're talking about social media, I'd also prefer if the mainstream media stopped producing these pictures as well. But anyway, that's just my opinion. I'm not even going to ask you to comment on that at all. And also, too, by the way, what we've also talked of is I read, I don't know, was it last week or the week before, John Joe, that the guards are actually doing people for this as well. If they witness people videoing whilst driving, they are doing them.
Yeah, I can't answer for the technicalities of the law, Greg, but yeah, it would be something that we would advocate for, definitely. I suppose I speak on behalf of all emergency services today that we ask for this. We see it at time to time, but I'm sure our colleagues in the Gardaí, they seem to see it even more. Yeah. And the other thing is, like, it's people at work as well. It's staff and colleagues of ours at work. They're working in very difficult situations normally, and then to be recorded or videoed on top of that, and then again that shared throughout all social medias is difficult as well.
Gardaí and those working at the scene of a collision need to be warned not to take videos and share them. Also, it's not always the public that are guilty of sharing these videos. But there have been cases, not here, yeah. But there have been cases, right? But, like, I get where that texter's coming from, but we are talking about, lets us take personal responsibility, yeah, and not do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Now, there is occasions where we will take a picture of the scene and take it with us to the ED department.
That's completely up to but you that's, guys. These are professionals doing
but the
job.
But the purpose of that, just to explain to the listeners, is that we then can show the receiving doctors and nurses what these people were involved in. And so a picture speaks 1,000 words in that terms, and that's why that may be coming across. Yeah. But after that, they're taken on HSE devices, and there's a policy to delete them thereafter.
There's GDPR issues that are followed as well. But we're talking here about saving people's lives. And if we sort of start valuing each other in life and the situation other people are in, this fixes this problem. That's why I'm slightly concerned that we're devaluing privacy and people's lives and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, John Joe, listen, it's just a request. Please, if you come on a road traffic collision, please think of what people might be going through. Please think that this is actually a scene where people are working potentially to save lives or to limit paralysis or whatever it might be. Focus on your driving. Get through the scene as safely as possible. Do not take out your phone. Have respect for the people injured, those working the scene, and certainly it's risky anyway from a driving perspective.
Indeed, Greg. And just again, too, if you do receive them, it's the thought process that you have when you go to share them.
Break the chain.
Yeah.
Thanks, John Joe. That's John Joe McGowan, Chief Ambulance Officer with the National Ambulance Service West. Right, stay tuned. Coming up in the next hour, of course, we are going to unveil our 4 finalists as part of Irish Music Month. So what's going to happen? Each of the 4 acts that will be announced in the next hour will receive €650 plus an allowance of €225 for their technical crew. So they get €875. They're going to come in for part of a special show next Friday from Ongrianon Theatre, where they'll perform live between 10 and 12. We'll have a special show just dedicated to that, right? So looking forward to that. We possibly can release seats for that if there's a public interest in going along and seeing the show live, but also the performances live. So we can certainly look at accommodating that. So then the judging panel, and there should be a listener participation in relation to that, is selected. They win a further prize and they go forward for national consideration then. So there's 21 national acts then judged on their winning performance and interview at the end of September. And then there's a shortlist of 6. It's the stages. The stages, I get you. It's a national event and that's going to be announced on Monday the 30th of September. So fingers crossed. We will get a Northwest band or singer into that national grand finale. Ireland's new local hero earns $5,000 in prize money and a $5,000 worth of recording time, a single released by Ruby Works label, and extensive radio support across the 21 participation stations. Finally, edited audio from the national final broadcast as a 1-hour special, so looking forward to that. So there's lots in it. Paul McDevitt and Jimmy Stafford are presenters of the Monday night sessions and a part of our judging panel. They'll be joining us a little later on. We'll talk about the 4 finalists. We'll talk about the show next week. And it's all very exciting. And there's been some fantastic results for people who've participated in this competition. Our winners last year have gone on from strength to strength. They're a great outfit in any case. Other participants from around the country, they've gone on to headline gigs to get a consistent radio play right across the Irish network of radio stations, supporting international acts, supporting Coldplay, supporting who sang Piano Man again? Can't remember his name, but anyway, so there's been some great success, and it's a great pathway to stardom for some people. Just get the break. And I think this, I think every one of our finalists are good enough to be big, but it's about getting the break, because that's what can be difficult. I think they've got all the tools to make it big, but hopefully this competition could be the one that gives them the break to make it big, if that makes sense. That's coming up in the next hour. I'm excited.